Caroline, Willie, D. Mace, 1025-1063, The Game and The Game Nashville app. We are streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every single day. Happy Super Bowl week. Happy Monday. Jared Stillman will be live from Radio Row. Mad Dog Russo on with Stillman & Company at 5 p.m. Willie D. D. Mace got the whole squad together today. How we doing?
Hey, we're doing
it's been
well.
A few days.
Yes, and I think we are repping right now. Willie's repping Denison.
I am.
And, of course, I'm repping Boston U, so.
I'm repping nobody
You're repping
today.
Nobody.
Someday.
One of these
Someday.
Days.
Yeah. One of these days, far in the distant future.
I'll be repping somebody one of these days.
Exactly.
But today, just two proud dads on the show.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, so it's wonderful. I'm having a good morning. I'm sure everyone else is having a good morning. 1 week closer to the Super Bowl. So that's good. UT had a good win this weekend.
Oh, mm-hmm. Man, did they.
And Vandy, it was a good win, I guess, but it doesn't.
It's a win.
It doesn't change anything.
It's the first SEC win
yes.
by the football or men's basketball team.
Yeah,
sure.
So, but beside that, I mean, sports was on this weekend. I didn't watch any of the Pro Bowl, so don't ask me.
I
purposely didn't watch it.
I watched a little bit of it because I went out to lunch yesterday and it was on TV at the restaurant. So it was kind of against my will because I was seated about 15 feet from the TV and it was the only thing that was on. I do want to get into that just because nobody really cares about the Pro Bowl. Really, all-star games in general. I don't feel like the general sports public gives a crap about any of it, myself included. So we'll get into that. We'll also chat with Teron Davenport at 1 p.m. I was on with TD on Friday. He had some great insight from the Senior Bowl. He had some great insight on some of the recent Titans assistant coaching hires. So he will join us at 1 p.m. But I want to start here because I heard this sentiment last week on Robbie and Rex Road. And it was kind of reiterated in The Athletic. Mike Sando's pick six. Of course, every week he has six topics that he breaks down and then a two-minute drill. So this sentiment that I'm talking about, Paul Kuharsky brought it up last week when he was in for Robbie Stanley on Robbie and Rex Road. And this was before the Titans had made any assistant coaching hires. This was before Nick Holes was ultimately hired as the next offensive coordinator. I believe this was either Monday or Tuesday of last week when Nick Holes' name, of course, new Titans offensive coordinator, when his name was brought up in as a potential candidate for the Titans' next OC. And, of course, Nick Holes, most recently in Jacksonville, he had a long stint with the Raiders, but goes all the way back to high school. Played at De La Salle High School with Brian Callahan. This was Paul Kuharsky last week.
His first offensive coordinator candidate that we hear of, Nick Holtz, who is from Jacksonville, passing game coordinator
for the Jags.
Yeah. You know, it's a Vrabel-esque kind of connection. You know, he worked for his dad for a year at Nebraska, and he was a teammate of his at De La Salle. Out in California, you know, I don't want to jump to conclusions there. You know, I just wish it came out in different order. You know, if this guy's if there were a list of four offensive coordinator candidates and he was one of them, he'd be all right. That he's the first name that comes to light. It's a teammate of his in high school.
Yeah,
doesn't get me excited. Does it get you excited?
Well, I. You know, look.
If we had problems with Vrabel bringing a bunch of guys from the Texans that he worked with, then we should question a high school teammate.
So before we get into Mike Sando's article, and he touches on this a little bit, Paul Kuharsky brings up Nick Holes. Mike Sando touches on Brian Callahan bringing in his dad, Bill Callahan, to be the offensive line coach. Do we have any concerns about that?
About the offensive, okay, let's start with his dad. No, I don't have a problem with that because it's not like his dad is just some, you know, journeyman coach that's, you know, been out of the league a few years, that had a stint here and then out, a stint here and out. No, his dad is a highly, and I mean highly respected coach in his business. So, you sort of check both boxes. You get to work with someone that you enjoy, but oh, by the way, he's the best. If not the best, he's top two or three at his position in coaching, meaning offensive line. And that's what this Tennessee Titans team needs. They need someone that can coach up this offensive line. So I'm not worried about the Bill Callahan situation. No way, no how. And I don't think anyone should be. You know, if you want to say nepotism, okay, yeah, it's there. But he's one of the best coaches at his position. So, you know, you got to kind of, you know, let that fall to the wayside. Now, in regards to the OC, if Brian Callahan wasn't making the play calls during the game, I would be a little worried. I would be sort of, you know, like, why did he make this hire? A guy that hasn't had true experience, you know, calling plays or anything, you know, in regards to the offense. Yes, he was pass game coordinator, and that title can, you know, bring about different roles, you know, duties in regards to what you do as far as the offense. But he's not calling the plays, so I'm not too worried about it. I thought they were going to go the route of hiring someone that he had already worked with. I thought Walters was going to be, or the other guy from Cincinnati,
Pitcher,
they end up getting the offensive coordinator job. I thought he was going to pick between one of those two because they have a history together. They know the same terminology. They've been in the same offense for a few years. But he didn't go that route. He chose to go another route. Now, listen, this thing, it doesn't – if this offense suffers or if this offense doesn't get going, then we are going to look back at the hire of offensive coordinator. But if this offense is clicking on all cylinders, I don't think we're going to pay much attention to it. Why? Because Brian Callahan is the play caller. He just needs someone during the week to help put everything together because he's the head coach. So you need someone that you can trust, that understands what you understand, that see the game the same way you see it, that during the week they all can help you put together a game plan. And then on game day, you are in charge of making calls, meaning Brian Callahan. Not Holtz, not anybody else. You are in charge of it. So I'm not too worried about it from that standpoint. But if this thing doesn't start off well from an offensive standpoint, they're going to be looking at that hire.
I agree that because Callahan really is going to be the guy who is going to be seen as the mastermind of the offense, mm-hmm. I don't know that it's going to be looked at the same way as we look at Downing or we look at Kelly, you know, the past offensive coordinators, because they've never had a setup like this since the Titans have been a team where the head coach is really the mastermind of the offense. And he said right off the bat, he's going to call the plays. So why wouldn't you hire somebody that you know and go way back with that sees the game the same way that you did? This isn't some, I don't think he's like, I'm going to hire my buddy. This guy looks like he's pretty qualified to me. I mean, it's not unreasonable that he's ready to be elevated to offensive coordinator. So I think Paul's overthinking it a little bit, and none of us know. Nobody's going to care in the least if they have a good offense, right? And how do we know? I don't care who it is if the guy can coach, whether you know the person, the guy comes from somewhere else. But is he qualified? Yeah, he's qualified. Like if he had been out of nowhere and said, this is my buddy from high school, you know, that's been coaching in the CFL or something. You know,
he's been an accountant the last 20 years.
He
coached a little football, but now he's an accountant.
And he's actually got a unique resume. He was in the NFL for a long time, but he's been at college for David Shaw, which was a really interesting, innovative program that did some pretty interesting things at the time. And he even had a year calling plays at a sort of outside-the-box university, UNLV. So he does have experience as an offensive coordinator for 1 year. So That checks the boxes for me is he qualified? So like the whole thing Vrabel-esque, let's not put labels on it. It's no big deal.
Right. The Vrabel-esque part of it of he's just hiring his buddies, well, that's what you do. That's what coaches do.
Everybody does that.
It's about relationships. And so I don't have a problem with that. I think more so what the problem was with Vrabel was not bringing in his buddies. It was retaining his buddies for too long when it obviously wasn't working. And when it comes to the offense, I have a hard time being too overly concerned about the offensive coaches that are coming in because this is Brian Callahan's offense. He is going to be running the plays. He's really the captain of the offense. So, you know, is Nick Holes going to be a great OC? I don't know. I can hope. I have some questions about, you know, how he hasn't really had a proven track record of working with and developing quarterbacks. But that's what Brian Callahan is there for. Mm-hmm. So I can't get overly, you know, worked up one way or another, overly excited one way or another, just because I don't know. We don't have a sample size yet.
Who would you rather go to sink or swim with, right? I want to say go to battle, but, you know, it's not really a battle. I think we get that, right? They're not soldiers, right? But you know what I'm saying.
I don't know,
in
Willie.
In a sports
Sundays
sense.
Of the fall, it is a battle.
In a sports sense, mm-hmm. Who do you want in your foxhole? You want people that you know. Mm-hmm. You want people that you trust. You want people you believe in. And so it's often people that you go way back with, and no, there's nothing unnatural about that. It's not, hey, let me hire my buddy because I love him. He's a good guy. Right. Let's give him a shot.
Because he needs a job.
This is, my butt is on the line. I'm the leader. I want to know. And so if I'm going to pick my dad or my high school buddy, it's because I think they're going to lead me to success. It's not like, hey, wouldn't it be great if dad and my buddy from high school that we went to prom together, let's all coach the Titans. It's going to be fun. Like,
go
I
team
hope,
Hungary.
I don't think that's what's going on here. No, I don't think.
I don't think so. And that's kind of what Mike Sando touches on in his most recent pick six in The Athletic. Talks about how the Giants this past year, maybe Brian Daboll, Mike Sando writes, had been tempted to bring in some of his friends, but brought in Wink Martindale as his defensive coordinator, somebody that he didn't have deep ties with or a strong relationship with. And we saw kind of how that turned out, how they moved on from the special teams coordinator, how there'd been some rumblings of the coaches kind of butting heads a little bit, not having great communication, how maybe the people who were saying, Brian Daboll made a great decision of not bringing in a bunch of his buddies. Well, the Giants didn't have that great of a season. And we saw that come to fruition with the coaching staff. And this is what Mike Sando writes, kind of bringing in the Titans side of things. He writes, enter the Titans. New Titans head coach Brian Callahan took the opposite of the Daboll approach when he hired his father, renowned offensive line coach and Super Bowl head coach Bill Callahan, to his staff in Tennessee. We could plausibly accuse the Titans of nepotism, but this hire also makes great sense for all involved. If you're going to hire your dad, make sure he's elite at what he does. Because when I look at the Bill Callahan hire, I don't look at it as just, he's just bringing in his dad. Mm-hmm. I mean, we heard Charles Robinson earlier. He said that Bill Callahan, from what he had heard from a lot of NFL GMs and executives, is that Bill Callahan is one of the two most important assistant coaches in all of the NFL. He and Jeff Stoutland, the offensive line coach in Philly. So I got no problem whatsoever. You want to call it nepotism? Fine. Mm-hmm. That was like one of the best moves of nepotism I could ever think of. But what I think is really the juicy part, the interesting part here that Mike Sando breaks down, he writes, as for Tennessee hiring the younger Callahan as head coach, why would ownership prefer him to former coach Mike Vrabel? The reason could extend beyond Vrabel's disagreements with owner Amy Adams Strunk. Of course, something that we've touched on ad nauseum. Mike Sando continues to write, NFL exec told him, I think in Amy's mind, she had Matt LaFleur on her staff and let him get away. She's trying to recreate that, and I get that. You'd like to have LaFleur right now, wouldn't you? 5 of the 8 new head coaches have backgrounds on defense. Again, another NFL executive added, I would probably look long and hard for the younger guy like this, like Brian Callahan, who can tutor the quarterbacks, call the plays, and I don't have to worry about losing him the way I lost LaFleur a few years ago. I can find Vic Fangio or someone like that to call the defense. You can rent those guys for 3 years, and your defense is going to be pretty good, and you keep the offensive machine running. So basically what this unnamed NFL executive is saying is that Amy Adams Strunk maybe learned her lesson letting the offensive guru Matt LaFleur out of the building, and that's kind of how she wanted to transition.
Yeah, I mean,
which makes sense to an extent.
Yeah.
But didn't she say a few months ago that she wanted Mike Vrabel to be their head coach of the future?
Yeah, I mean, it just and we said, you know, when it came out, we said, well, for now, yes, that's how it is for now. Things can change in this league, and it can change very fast. And we've all been witness to that, you know, as long as we've been watching football. There's been instances where, yeah, the guy's going to be there, and all of a sudden, bam, they you know, take an about face, and they end up walking the other way, and the guy that they loved or the player that they love is end up out in the, you know, ends up out of the door. So I understand what is being said, and I understand if indeed that was Amy's thought process. Like, listen, I don't want to lose another key part of my coaching staff because he gets a head coaching job somewhere else. That's just the trend of the NFL, is that if you hire this guru offensive coordinator, you know, eventually they're going to get a job as a head football coach if the offense does well. It can be the next following year, and then you have turnover once again. Here's what I would love to know. If you had a chance to do that over again, and this is a question for both of y'all, would you have hired LaFleur instead of Robinson?
Instead of Vrabel?
Instead of Vrabel, excuse me. Would you have hired LaFleur knowing that, you know, hey, listen, this is a – he was hired because of his offensive sort of knowledge. Mm-hmm. And he was in the running to be your head coach. It was between he and Vrabel at the end, obviously. And then you chose Vrabel. You make him an offensive coordinator. If you had an opportunity to do it over again, would you then hire LaFleur as your head coach, knowing that if this thing goes right, we're going to have our head coach slash offensive coordinator, which we don't have to make any changes, you know, down the line. Kind of like what Green Bay is going right through now. They don't have to make a change. They got their offensive coordinator. Kansas City never has to make a change because they got their offensive coordinator. San Fran, the Rams, so forth and so on.
It's a great theory. I tell you what, first of all, it's a great what if that you're asking. I brought that up to you guys before. I think the morning show's kicked this around. Joe Dubin loves in the summer to do these what ifs, right? What if they had called a forward pass on the Music City Miracle? Would Jeff Fisher have made it? You know, there's, you know, how long would Jeff Fisher have lasted as the coach? I mean, there's any number of these. They're fun sports debates to have. But I've never really thought that theory is the way to go. It seems like a popular theory now is hire the offensive coach. The pieces can turn over. If you have a good offense, you can lose a coordinator, and somehow that's easier to replace than it's the opposite. You run the defense, and you hire the offensive guru. I look at guys like John Harbaugh, who's really not associated with offense or defense, and I say that's a great model. Like he's except there's plenty of great head coaches that have been either offense or defense or neither. Maybe even special teams is your specialty, and it works. So I don't know that there's one way to do it, but this seems like to be the trendy thing that everybody's saying, and that fits with your LaFleur. Like going back retroactively, would it have been better if LaFleur got the job and then hired Vrabel as the coordinator instead of the other way around? That's a great what if. I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't give back necessarily what they did under Vrabel. I thought it was a good cycle. Like, a lot of teams would love to have a cycle like that. A couple division titles, opportunities to win. Not everybody wins. It's hard to win the whole thing. So I'm never a guy that is like, either you win the whole thing or nothing else matters. It doesn't matter. I mean, I like Mondays where you come in and your team's won and your team's in the hunt. I like seasons where your team gets to the playoffs. You know, these are good things, right? Yeah. It doesn't always come all together, but you have good memories if you have consistent winning teams, which they did for a while.
I don't even really know if Matt LaFleur is that great of a coach. I think that this past season was probably the best evidence that you could file under look at what he was able to do with the group that he had. Look at the development that Jordan Love has made year over year over year. Like a couple years ago, when you saw him in Kansas City, it was brutal. It was rough. And now it looks like he could be their next quarterback of the future.
Like,
but before,
like would LaFleur
the
have done a better
was,
job with Mariota for a set? Like if he were the head coach, would Mariota's career path gone any differently? I don't know. Do you think?
I don't know.
It's hard to know, right?
But I think the point here is in this article, the point is that this NFL, this unnamed NFL executive is saying, well, she's looking at what Matt LaFleur is doing in Green Bay and wants to recreate that. Or I don't think firing Mike Vrabel really had anything to do with that. I think that once she made the decision to move on from Mike Vrabel, they said, okay, yeah, we want to go into an offensive direction. That's the way that the league is going. We have a young quarterback. But I don't know that if over the last few years she was thinking, things would be better if we had LaFleur.
That's what, I don't think she ever thought that.
I don't think so either, because just a few months ago, she said that she...
revisionist history kind of quote.
It's easy to say that now.
Right. When they won at Lambeau and beat Matt LaFleur, do you think there was one person that would say, you know, I really wish we had LaFleur?
You'd be crazy if you thought that.
But yes. I mean, we could not have foreseen what was going to happen after that.
Right.
Right? I mean, so I just don't think that that has always been in the back of Amy Adams. Like, yeah, man, I let the great coach get away, man. I had LaFleur. I chose the wrong. I just don't think she's.
But I think the premise is moving forward with these NFL teams. Would you rather hire an offensive sort of minded head coach that then can be the offensive coordinator or delegate those duties, or do you want to just hire, you know, the best coach and then, you know, having to deal with the potential of turnover in your coaching staff? Especially with a young quarterback, you know, you don't want too much turnover. Why do you think, you know, I'm pretty sure the Lions gave Ben Johnson a raise. Baltimore gave Monken, I'm sure, a raise. Who else chose not to leave their team?
Slowick.
I'm sure they gave Slowick a raise. Why? Because these three coaches that I talked about, they improved their offense this year. And what happens when you improve your offense within a year or two? You get a head coaching job. So to try to curve that, we're going to give you a raise, and we may even make you assistant head coach. That's the only way we can sort of keep you here. And I think a lot of teams are, because the NFL they're so geared toward offense now. So we want this brilliant defensive mind on the other side, but we want our head coach to be this offensive guru. And there's nothing wrong with that, because that's the way the NFL is going. I can see if we were 25 years ago, it was just hire the best coach, the guy that could motivate him, offense, defense, it doesn't matter. But nowadays, I think owners are looking at it from the standpoint of, because there's so much turnover, we would love for our head coach to be our offensive guy. As much as I love John Harbaugh, as great of a coach he is, if you fast forward it 15 years and he tries to get hired, I don't know if he gets hired, because they're looking at offensive-minded coaches now.
And John Harbaugh, I think, is the exception and not the rule.
Yeah, he's not the rule. He's a special
team coach.
He's able
to find new coordinators
exactly
every single cycle. Mm-hmm. That whenever he loses his coordinators, which is about every 2 to 3 years,
yeah,
he fills them in with just as good, if not better, coordinators. Mm-hmm. So I think that you can't really model after the Baltimore Ravens and John Harbaugh.
Well, maybe not. I think that was old. That was more older school in the sense of how owners were thinking.
Yeah.
I think now they think a little bit different, and we can talk about this on the other side, but I think they may think a little bit different now because the NFL is so offensive and quarterback driven.
All right, we'll continue this conversation coming up next. We'll get into your thoughts as well. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet.
This weekend is about celebrating the stars. The next month will be about your future. Where are you at this stage? What is the priority for you as you figure out what's next?
Yeah, I haven't really got much into it just because it's still a little bit early for me. But right now, just enjoying every moment and until that time comes. And then when that time comes, dive into that and then make a decision.
That was Derrick Henry at the Pro Bowl games this past weekend. Caroline, Willie, D. Mays, we're broadcasting live from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Do we believe Derek when he said he hasn't really thought much about his future?
Nah, I'm not going to believe that.
I don't believe it for a second.
I'm not going to believe it. I'm sure he has thought about it. It's just human nature. Mm-hmm. When you are in a position like he is, where you finished out your career as far as contractually wise, with the team that drafted you, but you still have, you know, some good years left. Yeah, you're going to think about your future,
of
where you're going to be.
Of course you are.
I don't know why guys tend to say that. It's nothing wrong with saying, yeah, I've thought about it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't help but think about it. You have no place. You have no team right now. So
anyone
why aren't you going to think about it?
Would think about their future
exactly.
if their contract was up.
Absolutely.
Especially if you're 30 years old at a position that whose market has mm-hmm. honestly plummeted over the last few years. Of course you're thinking about it. Of course it's on your mind. You just don't want to talk about it.
Exactly. Just say that. Like, you know, I've thought about it some, but that's not – you know, what I choose to address right now, and you kind of move on. But to say I hadn't thought about it, nah, I'm not going to believe that one.
So let's take it. Let's go through the process, and you guys tell me if I'm off on how this is going to go. Because I think he's saying that just because that's the Bull Durham cliche line to say, I haven't thought about it. Right. You know, we know he's thought about it. It's his whole life, right? This is your livelihood. But there's really nothing that he can consider until – A, the Titans say, Derek, we're going to let you hit the market and see what's out there, and then give us a call, see what's out there. I mean, there's a couple different things. Like, they need to have that conversation. B would be, here's what we will offer you before you become a free agent. Here is what we have in mind. We want you to stay, but this is what we can offer you. That's B. Mm-hmm. Or C, Derek, we got to have you back. What will it take to keep you? Can we eliminate C right now?
Yeah.
Like, I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think we have to prioritize bringing Derrick Henry back. I think that's out, right? C is out.
Well, I think, where was it? Maybe from an agent. It was in an article somewhere. I believe it was ESPN.com. Maybe it was Jeremy Fowler that said this, that said, you know, if the Titans want to bring him back, I don't know, for perhaps maybe $10 million a year for 2 years, then he would do that. And I thought, that's definitely coming from somewhere. That would be probably Derrick Henry's asking price if you could go up to him and say, hey, we want you back, what will it take? But that is silly to do that. When you know, I feel pretty certain that the market is not going to be that robust for Derrick Henry.
No, it's not.
$10 million for 2 years.
Well, and here, from Derrick Henry's perspective,
was
you know this.
Was he saying 10 a year or?
10 a year, $20 million total two-year deal.
No way.
That's
no.
$10 million over 2 years, $5 million per. I'm willing to talk about that. Like, I'm willing to entertain that.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. And then Paul Kuharsky, I read what PK did on the nuances of the voidable years. Mm-hmm. Like, he's going to be an unrestricted free agent, but he is owed off the top, I think, $4.73 million.
Just shy of five.
Yeah. So there's that money. You're paying that bill anyway, even if you let him go. So anything you pay him beyond that is on top of the 4.73. So consider that. For sure, that counts. That's real money. But you know how this goes, D. Mason. This is what an agent will always say, right? Why negotiate against yourself?
Yeah.
You don't say.
Why put your cards on the table?
You don't say, here's what it would take to keep me. Why set that price? You got to let the market set that price. True?
Yeah. No. You let the market. And this is why, you know, some guys, you know, they would rather not, you know, hit the market. And that's a very small few, because the market may devalue you very quickly. And you may want to stay with the team that you're at, especially if they're showing interest and you're getting older. Okay, I stay with the team that I'm at. I'm familiar with them. This may be the highest, you know, dollar amount I get. But when you go out in the market, you know, for I'm just saying for a running back, I'm not. You know, attaching names here to it. But the market for a running back isn't $10 million per year. It's not. Even for the good, the really, really young good ones, they're pushing right at that 10, maybe a little bit over, maybe. But it's like pulling teeth to get them that deal, and they're 26. You see how long it took Jonathan Taylor to get his deal. Now, I know Jonathan Taylor was dealing with injuries and everything else, but it took him a while to get his deal. Mm-hmm. That was all messy before they decided. You look at the kid out of Minnesota. They end up going to Philly. What's the running back's name? He has a brother that plays in the NFL. His brother plays for Buffalo. Dalvin Cook. You saw the market for Dalvin Cook, and Dalvin Cook was coming off of, you know, multiple 1,000-yard seasons, and this is a guy that's 27 years old, and the market for him was very, very slim as far as what we were going to pay you. Mm-hmm. So you can go out and test the market, and the market will dictate whether you are a $10 million guy or $2 million guy. But as soon as the market, as soon as the market dictates that, that team, let's say the Tennessee Titans, they're going to look at that and say, you know what? All right, if the market says about two, we'll give you four. Mm-hmm. Or we'll give you, you know, four and a half, you know, per year. But we're not giving you sort of the 10 that's been thrown out there. Maybe that was just an arbitrary number. I don't know. But for a running back, to me, it's around right now his age or any other running back's age. It's about $2 to $5 million per.
And this is an offense that they have said, we want to become a modern passing mm-hmm. offense, which is different than Derrick Henry's skill set. So why pay? Let's take your thing, $5 million a year.
Yeah.
That's plus the 4 point. So you take that plus 4.73. Now you're up to 9.73. Unless you're saying pay for, you know, $275,000
on top of the 4.73.
But even that
bonus,
even that's not what you pay for the offense that you're going to run, mm-hmm. and you're bringing back Derrick Henry. He is a legend. Mm-hmm. I just think that the alternatives are so much better, where you just say it's time to part ways. Go do your thing somewhere else, and good luck to you. We will cherish every moment that we had you in this building, but it's trying to fit the round peg into the square hole or whatever it is. You know, look at what teams pay for running backs, or what you could pay for running backs. This mm-hmm. is what you have the opportunity to pay. You already have Spears, he's a piece, mm-hmm. right? You're putting somebody with Spears. Could you get a pretty good running attack, the kind that you're looking for to complement this passing attack you're trying to build, for a lot less than $9 million or $7 million for that one guy, right? And then take the rest of the money and throw it at offensive linemen, throw it at extra defensive backs, and you take that money and you spread it around. To me, that's the better use of the resources, in my mind.
I'm not overly concerned about the 4.7, mm-hmm. Whatever they owe him, because you're going to pay that anyway. That's on the books, whether he comes back or not. So I'm not overly concerned about that, because if you don't re-sign Derrick Henry, you're probably going to bring in another back. Mm-hmm. So that's just going to be compounded on top of that. But like we were talking about the TD and I on Friday when we were filling in for Jared. Somebody texted in and said, well, how would you feel about bringing in Dalvin Cook? And you bring in Dalvin Cook. What is he making now? I don't know what he's making now, but let's say it's $2 million.
Well, Dalvin Cook was released, or waived, right, and picked up by the Ravens. Mm-hmm. So what value does he even have right now? He doesn't have much.
He signed a one-year deal for $289,000. So he says his Spotrac.
Because he was released. Yeah, so correct. That would be his deal with the Ravens correct. For the remainder of the season. But let's say, $2 million? Is that fair? $2 million for Dalvin Cook? Mm-hmm. Well, do you want to pay $2 million for Dalvin Cook? Or would you pay $4 million for Derrick Henry?
What's my offense? My offense is a modern passing offense. Derrick Henry is a screen catcher, not a route runner. Never really has been a route runner. So you tell me, given the skill set. Dalvin Cook is much more of a route runner who is a running back. Remember, you're going to use Spears mm-hmm. for some of this stuff. So is it a fit for the offense you're going to run? I don't know Brian Callahan's offense. I'm just going by what he has done or what he has said he's going to do. I'm looking at what the Bengals have done, right? They have not had a Derrick Henry type of running back. Joe Mixon is a versatile back.
He did say that Derrick Henry fits every offense. That is what he said.
He said it, but he's trying to, say the right things about a legend.
Yeah,
Derrick Henry is a legend. 22 will never be worn again by a Titan.
Well, he can say that.
His statue is going on
he fits
outside.
Every offense.
I don't think he fits the offense.
I don't. When things like that are said, that's out of total respect for the player. But everybody knows that, okay, if you want Derrick Henry to run the football, okay. But that's not what this offense is about. We believe this Brian Callahan offense is going to try to maximize and utilize every player out there. And we don't want to have to, change our thought process on how we call plays because one guy comes in. Now, albeit Derrick Henry is a hell of a one guy, but when the coach says he can fit in any offense, That's not true. It's really not. But it's showing respect to that player. Like, I'm not going to sit up here and say he doesn't fit in what we're doing. That would be like malpractice, like coming in here and saying that your first day on the job, saying, oh, Derrick Henry doesn't feel anything that we do.
Well,
everybody's looking at him.
He can't say that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So what he said is Derrick Henry fits any offense, but in actuality, he doesn't. He doesn't fit any offense unless you want to be geared more toward a run, like pound, you know, running and pounding, and he doesn't need to come out the backfield. Now, when you look at Dalvin Cook, he gives you a bit of both. Is he Derrick Henry? No, but he can run between the tackles. He's a powerful runner. He can hit the outside, but he brings that element that Derrick Henry hasn't been able to bring to the Tennessee Titans, the ability to catch the ball out the backfield, the ability for us to not have to change our offense, the ability for us, for the defense to still be on their toes, don't know whether we're going to throw the ball or pass the ball. It wasn't like that when Derrick Henry was in the backfield. And hell, if I was a defensive coordinator and Derrick Henry was in the game, I would, you know, look to shut him down and damn the pass. We'll play man-to-man on the pass, but we're not going to let Derrick Henry run the football. I don't think offenses moving forward want to be that sort of predictable in a sense. Like, when our running back comes on the field, we don't want the defense to be thinking run or pass. We want them to be thinking, like, damn, what are they going to do? You know, they can run the ball up the gut with this guy, or they can fake it to him and run him on a route and throw. That's why San Fran is so damn good on offense. Why? Because the same guy that runs between the tackles and run powerful and get those hard yards is the same guy that they line up at the slot, that they throw passes out the backfield. You don't know what we're going to do. Like, it could be third and one.
And there's multiple guys that can do that.
Exactly. It could be third and one.
It's Debo. It's Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, so that's the type of offense that you want to be nowadays, that – if it's third and one, my back's in the backfield, you don't know if I'm running the football or throwing the football. Mm-hmm. Well, with Derrick Henry, 9 times out of 10, they're running the football. Now, they may trick us every now and then, but more than likely, they're running the football.
I do think that was something that the Titans could have utilized more. It's not just Derrick Henry, but the threat of Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
If he's out there more, when you're throwing the football, that's when you throw people off. It's not like he needs to get the football every single time he's on the field, but that's a completely different story for a completely different day. But I do want to continue this conversation coming up next. I do want to get into your phone. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. Plus, NHL All-Star Game this past weekend, NFL Pro Bowl games this past weekend. Like, does anyone care? And we'll discuss coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tonight as Vanderbilt women's basketball takes on Alabama at home. Pre-game at 5:45 p.m. Tip-off at 6 with coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app.
I mean, everyone around hockey knows you. You're a superstar. But to be named an all-star, does that still hold some weight and some importance to you?
Yeah, for sure. I think it does. Obviously, it's something that there's been some tough competition on our team with Roman Josi and Juuse Saros, obviously. So just even being named above those guys for this one means a lot. You know, they're phenomenal players and even better people as well. So that means a lot.
And that was Philip Forsberg at the NHL All-Star Game this past weekend. With the NHL All-Star Game, we had the NFL Pro Bowl games. Like, does anyone care about these All-Star games?
Well,
I would love to see what the ratings were.
Like fans.
Fans, I mean, a lot of people showed up at the Pro Bowl game, you know, but
I saw this headline on SA.com. The real 2024 Pro Bowl losers are those watching.
Yeah, I think I think they're going to get people to come because it's an event. You know, you put it in the city and people are going to come to it because they get to see their favorite players right there in person. But as far as watching on television, I mean, I'd rather, you know, mop my floor. I'd rather walk the dog, do something else. Honestly, I think from a hockey standpoint, because they still play hockey. Like, hockey is still played in the pads and everything else. So you can look at that, regardless of how they changed it, they're still playing hockey out on the ice. Football, that's a damn joke. Just stop it. That is a joke.
Well, they got to the point in the football where they just could not justify playing any kind of game anymore.
And like, I understand. I understand why. Because the money's so large and these individual players, you don't want to put them out there and they get hired in a game that doesn't mean anything. So I get that part, yeah. But this, all this stuff, I mean, obviously, whatever city they put it in, it's going to generate money no matter what. But as far as watching, I would be surprised if you know, if each year the ratings, I wouldn't be surprised if each year the ratings as far as watching it goes down.
It's gotten like that all in the different sports. I will say this for the hockey. I thought that the players themselves, after last year, I think it kind of sunk to a new low, the gimmicky, the players really weren't engaged, they weren't playing hard, and it's kind of like, okay, if we're going to do this, what do we do to try to spice it up, make it worth watching for somebody? You know, a lot of people are going to say, look, if my team's not playing in a game that means something, I'm not that big on the All-Star game. Some people, like kids and stuff like that, just they love the idea of all the great players there on the ice together. So I will say this about
great. It's the best players in the league at that time playing against each other, at least in the NHL.
So you know who took
it
the lead?
Be better.
You know who took the lead in the NHL? Connor McDavid, the best player. He decided to get a group of players together and say, "All right, guys, how do we add a little competitive streak into this?" So they put $1 million on the line for whoever won the skills competition. Guess who won it?
McDavid.
But he set the tone and said, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to do some drills that we all agree we're going to do, and we're going to go hard, right? And we're not going to get injured or anything like that. We're going to see who the most skilled guy is. And I thought it was – they got rid of a lot of the dead time and a lot of the dumb, you know, let's go to the beach or let's chip pucks at the fountains, at the Bellagio.
They got
rid of that. And so they really got down to let's get the real skills of hockey. I thought it was much more watchable. They did a much better job this year. And even the 3-on-3, you just heard Philip Forsberg, who had a great weekend. They picked the teams, so they changed it up. You weren't just like put on a team with your division. You selected the teams.
I like that element.
You put money on the line. And they kind of decided, and again, Connor McDavid, the top guys set the tone, right? If Connor McDavid showed up and said, guys, we're just going to stay out all night, we're just going to show up and go through the motions, then everybody would have done that.
Right.
But if he starts to play, then unless you want to get totally embarrassed, then you better start playing a little bit. And I think there was some of that. Like, they're not going to hit each other, but the 3-on-3 had a little more zip to it, a little more drama. Like, his team came from behind. They were behind. They came back and won in a shootout. Like, there was some drama to it. It's not going to be the same thing as the playoffs or anything, but I thought it was a better product. The best one, I think, since, and I'm biased, 2016, the first year that they did the 3-on-3, because it got to the point where 5-on-5, it was such a joke, and the score was like 19-17. It just wasn't anything close to a hockey game, just like the Pro Bowl football game wasn't anything close to a real football game, and people are just like, this isn't worth doing, right? So we have to find something else or not do it at all.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know what the NFL can do moving forward. I really don't.
That's the tough thing. Yeah. I wish that I could say this product is terrible. This is what I would do to make it better. But if you play an actual game, what players are going to risk injury in a game that doesn't matter? You're going to have good players decline to go to the Pro Bowl because they don't want to risk it. Well, what's worse than the Pro Bowl now? Having a bunch of just the 4th, 5th, 6th options playing in the Pro Bowl. And, you know, adding a cash incentive to it, making it so there's actually something that you can play for. Well, that's great and all, but how interesting is it to the average fan to watch a bunch of millionaires play for more money?
Yeah, I thought it was about as good as it could be for the hockey. I think the hockey
product was better this year than it has been in the past.
It was up 31% from last year.
They did a good job of marketing it.
And I think that the players set the tone. The players decided, look, we're gonna have a competition, and it's gonna be, you know, let's just play. Let's put our best foot forward here. Not hit each other. Like, we're not gonna do things that are gonna put us at risk to get hurt more than just being out there. And I thought they made the most of it. I thought it was the best since 2016. It's never gonna be great. It's never going to be a real game with the best on best. Like, that's what the Olympics are for. That's what this, what do they call it? The four nation, whatever that they're going to do. That's what they want to do. They want to have, you know, Sweden versus Finland versus U.S.
Yeah.
The best on best. There's tournaments for that. But the All-Star game You're trying to showcase your best, mm-hmm. let everybody see what they can do, and have the pageantry, right? That's what you're looking for. It's an event, like you said, D-Base. Well, yeah. And the city that hosts it, and it was in the hockey mecca of Toronto, so they had that going for them. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was an overall, I give it a thumbs up. The last couple before this one, I thought we're kind of, okay, we need to work on this a little
bit.
Well,
I think they did work on it, and obviously it paid dividends this year. You know, the NFL, there's nothing that can be done. Because my thing is, I don't want to see grown men play tug of war. I don't want to see dodgeball. I don't want to. It's great for those who are actually there. Because they get the guys to sign autographs and all this, take pictures.
Right.
But it's hard for the when they're broadcasting this stuff, the broadcasters are talking about any and everything else. And they're trying to get you into it, but can you get into dodgeball? Can you get into, a guy, a center hiking the ball, but, to try to hit these certain spots on the wall? The NFL just... they've tried everything that they could possibly try. Now what they need to say, let's just do away with it. But I know they never will because it's a money generator.
Right.
At the end of the day, it makes more money. It makes more money, which makes more sense for them. Mm-hmm. But as far as, like, actually watching it on television, the kids nowadays, like, for us, Willie, we can think about a Pro Bowl way in the day that we saw that we loved the game. Why? Because they played. It was like, because these guys actually
the extra played. Money made a difference.
The extra money. They played so you could look at that game like, oh, man, this guy went against this guy, and they were really going at it. And I saw a Jerry Rice go against, I don't know, a Rod Woodson. And they went at it for that quarter or those plays, and it was great. You can't say that now. Yeah. Moving forward, these kids can't say, I saw such and such go against such and such, and it was a great matchup. You're not seeing that now. And you will never see it moving forward. So my thing is, I know it makes money, which makes sense, but from a viewership standpoint, it really doesn't make much sense.
It is cheese.
Yeah.
So cheesy. And that is the idea, right? Mm-hmm. The best going up against the best. But... I don't know what the NFL can do. Yeah,
the NFL, I really don't know what they can do.
I don't know what they can do, and I do think it's going to get to a point where, how much money are you making to make it worthwhile to put this event on that people are not watching?
But are people not watching? I'm sure somebody watched. Like they get people to tune in. Like the only thing I saw was David Njoku swinging off a rope, doing a backflip in the air and trying to catch a football from a guy throwing it from a boat.
Honestly, which that's going to get about, you hurt
for about
maybe
2 minutes,
than a football game will.
For about 2 minutes, I was like, okay, this is interesting. Let's see if he catches one. And then that was it. After that, I was like, okay, I'm moving on. I'm switching the channel. What else is on? College basketball? Okay, I'm in.
You know when you go to your field day, your local grade school?
Right.
Yeah, if I want to go see that, I'd rather go to a grade school than watch
exactly.
The
but I'm telling you.
Are we going to do like an egg drop next year?
Yeah, seriously.
I science swear, experiment?
You could have a tiddlywinks contest with the people, and some people would watch. Some people. Not the three of us, and not the masses, but... this is the NFL. Like they will watch. Some people watch the dodgeball. They did. ESPN, they're showing highlights of the dodgeball. Derrick Henry throwing the ball. Okay, fine. This is not for me, but that's okay.
Viking Matt said, just do a cook-off competition.
I take that better.
That might be more entertaining.
Exactly.
All right, 615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll get back into your phones on this. But coming up next, I thought initially that this was something that was an absolute no-go for the Titans. No way that it could possibly happen. But I've changed my mind on that. And we'll explain coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mays, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.